Breaking news coming out right now involving the Robert Mueller investigation. The New York Times reporting that former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort and his associate Rick Gates have been told to surrender to authorities. The charges against them not immediately made clear.
Those charges against two of President Donald Trump's key allies dominated this week's news cycle.
I'm being told that the president is really angry and that people inside the White House are certainly feeling the reverberations of what happened.
It is the biggest and boldest move so far by the Office of Special Counsel Robert Mueller. Manafort and Gates are both facing multiple counts of money laundering and conspiracy charges. Both are under house arrest. But another name, George Papadopoulos, was also causing waves in high places.
I think that Papadopoulos is an example of actually somebody doing the wrong thing while the president's campaign did the right thing. What Papadopoulos did was lie, and that's on him, not on the campaign, and we can't speak for that.
White House spokesperson Sarah Huckabee Sanders talking about George Papadopoulos, a former foreign policy advisor to the Trump 2016 presidential campaign. Just hours after the Manafort and Gates indictments were unsealed came the surprise bombshell. Papadopoulos had struck a deal, a plea agreement, making him a cooperating witness in Mueller's investigation. This took most people by surprise, but not Seth Abramson. The University of New Hampshire professor and poet is also a former public defender and criminal investigator, and he had been on Papadopoulos' trail for weeks. He's in Manchester, New Hampshire. Seth Abramson, hello. Welcome to Day 6.
Good morning.
George Papadopoulos flew under most people's radar. Why were you watching him?
Well, I was very focused on then-candidate Trump's National Security Advisory Committee, a 12-person committee which was established in March of 2016, because that was the committee that orchestrated the GOP platform change on the Ukraine
right.
in July of 2016. And so George Papadopoulos was a member of that committee, as well as a number of other major figures in the Trump-Russia probe.
Did you foresee that there was going to be a charge laid against him that could actually, as it did, end in a guilty plea?
Well, what I would say is this. Papadopoulos was not actually a low-level staffer. He had access to top Trump officials, and he was on this fairly small National Security Advisory Committee. But within that committee, he was the junior member. And so it did seem likely that if Bob Mueller was going to try to penetrate that committee through charges, Papadopoulos would be one of the people he'd be likely to start with.
Because what you just said about him not being low-level, that's contrary to how President Trump and the White House are spinning Papadopoulos this week. They say that he was insignificant and that he's just a liar. What was Papadopoulos holding that he brought to the table of that committee?
Well, the most interesting piece of information that came from Mr. Papadopoulos' plea affidavit is the fact that not only did he have at least three high-level contacts associated with or in the Russian government, one of them was actually a member of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, but as of April 2016, those contacts from the Kremlin were indicating to him that Russia was in possession of Hillary Clinton emails. And he communicated this information to high-level officials with the Trump campaign, and that includes Sam Clovis, it includes Paul Manafort, Corey Lewandowski, Carter Page, and communicated that he might be able to access that information from these Kremlin officials, and he was encouraged to pursue that effort.
So what is the timeline now? When did Papadopoulos stop working for Trump, and when did he start working for Mueller, and did those two things overlap?
Well, you may remember that when Paul Manafort was originally let go in the summer of 2016, the Trump campaign very quickly said that he was only with the campaign for a very short time.
Right.
You'll notice they're not saying that about George Papadopoulos because we know that he was at least with the campaign from early March 2016 through the inauguration in January of 2017, but he was representing himself at that time as someone who would continue on with the Trump administration. So we don't actually know how far into the late winter or spring of 2017 George Papadopoulos was with the campaign, but he was with them a very long time.
And how long did he have contact with those people, the people that were on the Trump team after he pleaded guilty and was convicted?
Well, we know his contact with these Kremlin officials or agents of the Kremlin started in March of 2016 and extended for a number of months, at least through July and August of 2016. As far as his contact with Bob Mueller, he was arrested at Dulles Airport on July 27th of 2017, and there was a motion to seal his arrest record at that point because Bob Mueller was representing to the court that Mr. Papadopoulos was a quote-unquote proactive cooperator, which would tend to suggest that he was going to covertly intercept inculpatory evidence from officials he had had contact with previously, but now on behalf of the federal government's investigation of the Trump-Russia ties.
So those people wouldn't have known that he had been convicted?
They wouldn't have known that he had been arrested on July 27th, and they wouldn't have known that he ultimately entered a plea on October 5th of this year until this Monday, when Bob Mueller revealed that at the same time as the indictments came out against Paul Manafort and Richard Gates.
So do you believe that through that time, Papadopoulos might have been wearing a wire?
He was in some way, based upon the language of the motion to seal, some sort of covert evidentiary collection. It could be wearing a wire. It could be the use of a cell phone, social media, text, email. But in some way, he was being encouraged to continue the high-level contacts he previously had within the Trump campaign and now the Trump administration, and to try to gather evidence from those officials he was in contact with. Jeff Sessions, Sam Clovis, Paul Manafort, Corey Lewandowski, Carter Page, and other members of the National Security Advisory Committee.
So that feels pretty significant to this investigation. Do you think that this conviction is more significant than the Manafort and Gates indictments?
It's far more significant. It really goes to the question of collusion, and it goes right to the heart of that question. Now, having said that, the Manafort and Gates indictments are significant primarily because they will almost certainly be used by Bob Mueller to try to get one or both of those men to flip on someone higher up. Manafort's a 68-year-old man, now looking at 10 to 15 years in federal prison, and so those 12 indictments against him, everything from money laundering to conspiracy against the United States to making false statements to failing to register as a foreign agent, those will all be used to try to get him to look ahead, see the possibility of a life in prison, and possibly cooperate with the Mueller probe.
How possible do you think it is that President Trump will try to fire Bob Mueller?
I think it is extremely likely that President Trump will try to do one of three things. The first is attempt to direct Rod Rosenstein, or if Rod Rosenstein refuses, Rachel Brand at DOJ, to fire Bob Mueller. The second possibility that he has on the table is to direct Jeff Sessions to open up a new special counsel investigation of Hillary Clinton regarding uranium sales to the Russians several years ago, in the hope that that would conflict Mr. Mueller out of the Trump-Russia probe, because he would then, in theory, be a witness in this other special counsel investigation. And then the third possibility would be to try to defund the special counsel's office. But really, if he takes any concrete steps towards any of those three options, I think you will immediately see a reaction in Washington, including from Republicans who thus far have said that they don't think there's any possibility any three of those things could happen.
Mueller's team is so accomplished, and they must be being so careful at this point in this investigation. Can you give me some perspective? How do you feel about this team? What do they represent in terms of their abilities and what they're bringing to the table?
Well, I'll say it as plainly as I can, Brent. This is the most important federal criminal investigation of my lifetime. And Bob Mueller has assembled a team commensurate with that status. It's a large team of 40 individuals. A number of them are attorneys, and each of the attorneys are really at the top of their respective subspecializations within the law. And that's what you would expect him to do. That's the team you would expect for an investigation which, no matter how it turns out, will be a historic investigation of a sitting U.S. president.
If you were Robert Mueller, who would you be gunning for? Who would be next on your list?
Sam Clovis was the national co-chair of the Trump campaign, and he actually was the one who hired all of the individuals who were on the National Security Advisory Committee. So Sam Clovis, who recently spoke to the grand jury, is someone who clearly would be of interest to talk to for Bob Mueller to see whether he has information on higher-ups. As the national co-chair, that possibly would be Mr. Trump himself. And then I think he'll be looking at other members of the National Security Advisory Committee, including most particularly its head, and that would be Jeff Sessions, and then other people on the team like Carter Page, who we already know about, who may have been directed to take certain actions either in Moscow, in the case of Carter Page, who went to Moscow in July of 2016, or at the RNC in July 2016, where J.D. Gordon was involved in the GOP platform change, according to an interview that he gave with CNN.
But as of today, there's no way to know what the timeline will be for those charges if they come.
No, but really, more indictments could come at any time. I certainly think more grand jury testimony from major Trump officials could come at any time. Mm-hmm. And so this is moving at a brisk pace, though it certainly is a number of months away from conclusion.
Seth Abramson, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Seth Abramson is a University of New Hampshire English professor and poet, also a former public defender and criminal investigator. This week's events have added new fuel to the talk of impeachment. So we have fired up the Day 6 impeachometer for another reading. On Thursday night, it appeared that Trump had been impeached by Twitter. It was just a brief 11-minute hiatus bestowed by a departing employee. We are tracking the odds that Donald Trump's presidency will end in impeachment for real. From 1, meaning totally safe in the White House, to 100, meaning impeachment is imminent. When we last checked in at the end of September, writer and Slate editor Dahlia Litwick upped the odds of impeachment to 35%. And today, we've asked Seth Abramson to give us his reading.
Well, I think you have to consider the fact that George Papadopoulos had access to top Trump officials, and therefore I think we are honing in with Manafort, Gates. You're at a level that is very senior to some top Trump officials and very close to the president.
So let's get to that number. Seth Abramson, on our impeachometer scale of totally safe in the Oval Office to imminent impeachment, where totally safe is 1 and imminent impeachment is 100. Where do you place Donald Trump this week?
This week's Day 6 impeachometer reading is
65.
Seth Abramson of the University of New Hampshire has bumped the Day 6 impeachometer by 30 points, all the way to 65%. That is the highest it's been, and the first time it ticked past even odds. These numbers will change. So, as we move forward, you can keep tabs at home by charting the impeachometer progress on our website, cbc.ca/day6.